Hi, welcome to Gridiron Gurus. I'm Travis Lazarczyk alongside Drew Bonifant for the Kennebec Journal and Morning Sentinel. It is championship week here in high school football in Maine. Our guest this week is Coney head coach B.L. Lippert. Coach, thanks for being here.
Thanks. I don't have any practices to tend to this week, so I've been available for a few weeks, so thanks for having me in again.
Keep you here all night. Let's first start with or kind of a recap, Drew, of Class E. The developmental class had a championship game of sorts this past week with Booth Bay beating Marinacook.
Yep, in a close game, a 6-point game, and I think it kind of it accomplished what the NPA was hoping this would do. It brought some programs back that were just finding football really tough to either really tough to field team or field a competitive team. They were able to do it this time under these guidelines, and with the exception of Trape, these teams kept their programs and continued. You know, Camden Hills was also a consistent program. Going through, and I think they were probably the fear was that they get started and then you just see these programs start to drop off. I guess we couldn't do football anyway, even under these guidelines. They were able to do that. Good game between two evenly matched teams that played competitive games throughout the year. So I think it was a positive step in the direction for this new league.
Do you see either of these teams feeling like they're ready to make the move back up to Class D anytime soon?
I don't. I talked to Walter Polkey at Marinacook about it, and I broached that topic. Is it now ready to, you know, is this all kind of the validation you needed or the confirmation you needed to be able to make that step up? He didn't really go that direction. I think if they're happy in E, I can't speak for Booth Bay, but I think they're happy with where this is going, and they want to be part of this, make sure it continues to flourish. They talked about probably more teams coming into the mix. I don't know if it's teams moving down from D that have found it hard to struggle, like, or find it hard to compete like they did, or teams that have been wanting to add football to their repertoire, sure, making that move up. But I think the focus isn't so much like, oh yeah, we were good in Class A, now let's move up, let's get back to Class D, as much as this shows that we had something good going here, and let's try to make this have a good second
continue
season
to build
here.
On yeah. it. Yeah. Coach, when you talk to coaches around the state, are you hearing any others who say, you know, our program might be looking at moving down to Class E? Or what's kind of like the talk around the coaching community?
I haven't heard a lot of conversation about it. You know, I know a few people from the Marinacook area that it seems like they're pretty happy with, you know, that result. Because when you're playing in the class and you're just getting consistently beaten pretty handily, that gets, you know, frustrating for the coaches, for the players, for the community. So I think they've enjoyed this process. I know I'll be interested to see, you know, does it become just a permanent class where people can kind of rotate in there as on a needs-based, you know, basis? Or is the goal, you know, within a couple of years to, like, hey, we had it for a little bit, you're either in or you're out now, we're sticking with our four classes that we've established. So I'll be interested to see where it goes, because it could go either direction. I think it served its purpose, as you said, for this year. And I think I would assume they'll do it again next year, but, you know, with the NPA, you don't really know what their, you know, agenda is, you know, is. So, you know, we'll have to watch, and we have the local team that's doing pretty well with it, so it's something we, you know, kept an eye on all year.
Now, I wonder, is this a one-year thing, or will the NPA, you know, make it a two-year commitment like the usual classification cycle?
Yeah, you know, I've heard that this year's schedule was just a one-year schedule because of Class E, so I don't know. I heard that from, I believe the Brewer AD told us that at one of our, and he had heard that, so there's, I don't think it, like, anyone knows definitively, believe it or not, because I'm thinking, well, we're either opening up at Falmouth or we're getting a whole new schedule, and that's dramatically different, you know, and you kind of like to know going into your off-season preparations for whatever reason what the schedule might be, so there's no clarity on that at this point. That usually comes up, you know, and actually, believe it or not, in the spring they kind of get around to finalizing that, so I would hope they do it for another year. You know, it'd be weird to just do it for 1 year, and if it was a, you know, huge failure, I could see them saying never mind, but it seems to have served its purpose, so I would guess they'd give it another year.
Yeah, the football community typically meets in December at some point to kind of go over the last season, talk about things they could improve as they, you know, get discussing things in the spring, and I'm sure this will come up.
Yeah,
and I gotta think that they're gonna be happy with the returns, both for what we talked about, the fact that you didn't have programs dropping off like flies as the season was going on, and the fact that they had competitive games in the playoffs. It wasn't one team that knew that had something good going and the other, you know, those didn't, and they just, you know, you had 40-0 games going in the playoffs. That wasn't the case. You had 20-14 games. You had 13-6 games, less scoring than you would see in the A through D, but close games. I got to think that they're going to look at that as something encouraging going forward.
Yeah, the playoffs did feel like they were competitive right down through, you know, the quarterfinals to the regional finals last week. Let's go on to the state game, starting with Class D. We have Foxcroft Academy versus Wells. Both of these teams, guys, were in Class C last year. Wells, the defending state champion in Class C. Foxcroft moving down from Class C North back to the Little Ten Conference. Drew, you saw Wells last week in the regional final against Madison. How do the Warriors look?
They are very, very good on both sides of the ball, especially on defense. They, it's Nolan Potter and Sean Kuman, McCormick Kuman,
yep,
are two of the best linebackers in the class, and they just swarm to the ball. Madison has as much offensive firepower as any team in Class D or D South or North, and they couldn't get anything going. They couldn't get it going on sweeps, on draws, on counters at the middle, whatever you wanted to dial up, they couldn't get it going. And that's kind of Wells' MO. They've been doing that to all teams. It wasn't like they conjured it up for one game. This has been their MO all season. And with Potter and Tyler Bridge running the ball, it's pounding up the middle with Potter, and it's around the outside with Bridge, and it's just a lot to contain. They're tough, and you really have to. And they don't make mistakes. They don't turn the ball over. They don't throw so much, so you don't really get interceptions into the mix. Foxcroft is going to have to really, really button down and make sure that these are short drives and that Wells isn't able to march down the field.
Yep. Coach, have you had a chance to see either of these teams?
Well, yeah, I saw 12 kids from Foxcroft. They drove down every day in a van to our camp this summer, the kind of statewide camp we held, and their quarterback's a really good athlete, ran for 1,000, threw for 1,000. He was kind of nicked up at our camp. He played a couple days and sat out the rest. But the Smith kid that's a junior, his brother Hunter, I'm blanking on this kid's first name, Harrison.
Hyatt,
yes, yeah. An awesome first name, Hyatt. I thought it was Hyatt Smith, that kid.
We got the H right.
Only a junior, but a tremendous athlete. He made a catch last week in traffic, just jumped over everyone. So they're pretty dynamic offensively and, you know, well-coached. But so is Wells. You know Roach is probably, you know, one of the top, you know, five coaches in the state of Maine. They're consistently competitive, you know, down there in southern Maine. We don't see a lot of Wells up here, and we have now because of the reclassification. But he's a great coach, and I think it'll be a pretty decent game. Wells probably the favorite going in, but Foxcroft's got some offense, and Danny White will have him ready, so it should be an entertaining game, I think.
Yeah, that's in a strange twist of fate. That's the only game of the four state championship games that's not a rematch of a regular season game. Thanks to some reclassification and scheduling outside of your conference, and really working hard to make sure that you schedule competitive games. Class A, B, and C are each a rematch. Coach, looks like that scheduling when we were talking earlier in the season, where they wanted to make sure that these crossover games were going to be against teams that were pretty equal, kind of worked out.
Yeah, it definitely worked out. And you see these rematches, and anyone that thinks that you can draw a ton from that first matchup, I think is just wrong. I mean, particularly Skowhegan, we'll get to Skowhegan, Marshwood. That was week one. They're 10 weeks removed from that. And some kid injuries, any number of things can take place over the course of 2.5 months. But there's certainly some familiarity there that coaches will know going into it. I think the crossovers worked to a large extent. We lost to Gardner. They went to the final. We lost to Falmouth. They went to the final in the regular season and lost to – who was our other loss? I'm blanking right now. Skowhegan. Yeah, and they went to the final. They were in the state final. So we played some pretty good teams this year. It was pretty cool to see those teams keep advancing. So I think it worked out. I think they did a good job doing that. I don't know much about that Cape Elizabeth MCI early matchup, but I know Coach Bertrand's got them playing pretty well right now.
Sure.
So that Cape's got their hands full.
Well, let's get on to that Class C game right now. Cape Elizabeth versus MCI. MCI, Class D state champion last year, kind of started out a little slowly this year. Drew, they were 2-3 coming off back-to-back losses to this Cape Elizabeth team and Mount Desert Island, and then they just got hot. They won three games in a row on the road in the playoffs, including against teams Winslow and MDI, who beat them in the regular season.
Yeah, and I saw them play that first matchup against MDI in the regular season. I pretty much wrote them off right there. We talked about last week. It was 35-0 at halftime. MCI couldn't do anything against the MDI starters and just felt like this might be a good team, but MDI is clearly the class here. MCI is a second tier team in this, and they've turned it around. It's just what coaches always like to say, that they start to find that rhythm. Things, if there are maybe some personnel questions in the middle of the season, those get themselves figured out. It's hard to look at it as anything other than MCI has just found its stride and started to show that form from last year.
Yeah, playing with confidence against MDI up in Bar Harbor on Saturday night. This is a MDI team that ran all over them in the regular season. You saw it. They just couldn't stop anything, particularly Colby Lee. In the first quarter on Saturday night's game, Lee runs for an 80-yard touchdown. You think, oh, here they go again. But then that was all that the Trojans really got all night. I don't, you know, every other drive was just, if it wasn't three and out, it was quick or a turnover. And MCI kind of out MDI'd the Trojans in that they had the long drive. This drive that started in the third quarter on their own 12 went, I think, 20 plays, 88 yards, took almost 10 minutes of clock off. That's what Mount Desert Island does to you. They grind out those long drives and play keep away. And I'll have to look at my stats, but I think MDI might have only had the ball for maybe 7 or 8 plays in the whole fourth quarter. And the Huskies pull away 27-6 and win the game going away.
Yeah, coaches like to say, you know, the best way to, you know, we like to keep, we play, we keep our offense off the field by staying on the field. It's one thing to do that just by running the ball a lot, but it's another thing to be able to gain those yards and actually be able to pull it off. It's like, you know, running heavily isn't the key. Running heavily and getting yards is the key to be able to pull it off.
And MCI had a really, one of the gutsiest calls I've seen all year. Fourth and 2 or 3 from around their own 20. Fake punt, direct snap to Adam Bertrand, one of their best players. He gets 6 or 7 yards. The chains move. They keep that long 88-yard drive going. At the time, they're only ahead 14-6, and they're putting the Trojans in prime short field territory there if they don't make it. Coach, I know, have you ever thought for going for it in a situation like that? Like,
yeah, we would just traditionally line up and run a play because we don't spend a ton of time on our fakes. Bertrand does, though. Tom had two fakes against Winslow, pulls out another one last week, and I coached with him at the Lobster Bowl, and he is a meticulous, you know, guy that he came. He was our defensive coordinator that year. I say R because Robbie Vachon was the head coach, and he showed up with 150 plays because Mike Hathaway, the Levitt coach, was the OC for the West. He had these play cards already drawn up from stuff he'd found on YouTube, and then every night while we were kind of sitting around having fun, he was over at the desk writing up new plays for the next day, and we're like, Bertrand, just leave it. We don't know what they're going to run. It could be anything. And he just wouldn't, you know. And our defense played great. We were, you know, fortunate to win that game, and I knew right then. I didn't know him at all until that week. And he was just really, really focused and intense. And, you know, so I could imagine him, you know, working on trick plays every day probably up there at MCI. And in moments like that, when you dial them up and they work, it makes it all worth it. So he's a really good coach. Probably if they had a statewide coach of the year, it'd be, you know, you could make a pretty good case for him moving up a class and dominating, you know, this playoff run they've had. It's been pretty impressive.
Yeah, beating two teams that beat you in the regular season is always a tough feat, particularly both on the road. With these rematches like that, particularly the Winslow game in the regular season was close. They lost to them by 3 points, beat them by 1. But to come back and so soundly beat a team like Mount Desert Island that beat you soundly in the regular season, you know, we might talk about this with the next games too, Skowhegan and Marshwood. But what can you, like, say to your team to get them motivated to turn it around like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you're on a playoff run, there's just an enthusiasm about that. And, you know, hopefully that game wasn't the last game of the regular season. Maybe it was midway through, or you've had a couple personnel shifts. Well, so-and-so is playing running back for us now. We didn't have him. You know, and we saw it with us. Brunswick, you know, we beat them pretty handily week 3, and they came back and beat us in the playoffs, you know, by about the same margin, I guess. And a lot changes over the course of the year. So, you know, you just have to tell your kids that on any given night, we beat Lawrence last year in a playoff game after they really sort of destroyed us in the regular season. And it happens more often than people assume. You know, it's not the NFL where, you know, great teams are great all the time. You know, all it takes is a couple turnovers here or there and a 10-minute drive, and in high school football, you know, the game could be over. So it happens quite a bit. And that's, you know, if you're the team that lost in the regular season, you just got to, you know, hold out hope that, you know, the tide will turn, and a lot of times it does.
Drew, you talked to a lot of coaches about this very thing this week.
Yeah, and a lot of coaches, it's, you know, some of them have lost the first game by as much as 59 points was, you know, we'll get to Windham and Scarborough in a second, but or soon enough. But they pretty much have the same. You don't really have coaches coming in and just being like, yeah, well, we know it. We know we're in for a tough game. We're just trying to do the best with what we got or something like that. They're saying, no, that was a different team that they played the first time. This is weeks later. We're you know, we don't have the same players in the same positions as we did before. The refrain to keep hearing is, yeah, they're a great team, but we're a great team too. That's why we're in this game. And it's I asked them, is it easy to kind of keep players from having that sort of pessimistic outlook, you know, when they're preparing for a game? Or is it tough to get them to not have in the back of their heads, you know, This team did just embarrass us a few weeks ago, and they say it's something that they're aware of, that the coaches are aware of, to try to get them not to be thinking. But it's usually not that hard. Players are pretty confident themselves. Because it's not like you go from playing that last regular season game to this game. You win playoff games against other good teams.
Get a little momentum going and feel good about yourselves.
And
coaches are always saying that, you know, you want to be better each week. This is your chance to prove it.
Yeah, and you know, and we the year we won the States, Kennebunk had beaten Greeley 42-0. We lost to Greeley in week 7 by 2 touchdowns, 35-21. So, you know, most of the pundits, most on NBR, you know, had us as 3 or 4, you know, touchdown underdogs, and with every, you know, every reasonable, proof right there in front of you. So, yeah, they lost by this. And Kennebunk maybe was a better team than us. They turned it over 5 times that night. We turned it over once. And, you know, so stuff like that happens and, you know, any given, you know, Sunday, or in this case Friday or Saturday, and you can pull it off. So, you know, as you said, that you build momentum throughout the playoffs. And by the time you get to a state game, you know, like the enthusiasm, the community support, like you aren't really too concerned with a week 3 or, in Skowhegan's case, a week 1 loss. I mean, that feels like, you know, 2 seasons ago. So I'm sure Skowhegan's flying high and can't wait to, you know, go down there and play Saturday night.
Yeah. Let's talk about that game. Class B, Skowhegan versus Marshwood. Marshwood undefeated. This is their 4th state championship game since 2012. They've won 2 of them. Skowhegan, their first state game since 2008, going back 9 years. And this is a rematch again. Marshwood went to Skowhegan, the long trip from Elliott to Skowhegan in week 1, and took a 55-12 win. I think it was 42-0 at the half. I was at that game, and I can't remember. I just know it was ugly.
Yeah, we saw. We got that film. It was 42.
But this is a Skowhegan team that a lot of people question throughout the season. You know, yeah, they can score on anybody, but can they stop anybody? Because while junior quarterback Marcus Christopher is putting up crazy video game-like numbers and they were scoring 50 often, they gave up 50 points 4 times in the regular season, which is something you don't often see out of a state championship caliber team. But this is a team, guys, that defensively in the playoffs has found it, only allowing 13 points in a win over Brewer in the semis and then shutting out a good Lawrence team last week 23-0.
Yeah, I'm done predicting Skowhegan to lose in these shootouts, and expect that those defensive shortcomings to make themselves known. Clearly they've patched it up, because I saw that game that they played against Messalonsky where they just couldn't stop the run at all, and it's night and day difference from there. I mean, because Lawrence can move the ball as well as any of those teams at B North, and look what they did against them in their own building, so in Skowhegan's own building. But the other thing about that we did know about Skowhegan, even when they were giving up points, is that they have a great secondary. We've talked about that with Bell, with Barnes back there. They can match up against teams that can throw the ball.
Yeah, and that's really what they've done. They kind of packed the box defensively, and Barnes and Bell are back there. And the one subtle move, they moved Sean Savage, who early in the season was playing free safety, and they moved him up to the second level. And he's a heady, kind of their adjuster to motions and formation strength. And he's really, like I would say, the leader of that defense. He, you know, you notice him on film. He jumps out as a kid, and against us, you know, it was week 2. But he stood out as really, you know, being a difference maker for them. And I think that really helped them. I was at the Lawrence game Friday and whatever wind chill. I think you were
7
there. 7-degree wind chill. It was a little chilly. And they just really dominated up front on both sides of the ball. They did a great job. And, you know, then the offense is explosive. John Bell, for the second half of the season, for me, is the best player in our conference. You know, regardless of, you know, he just kick returns, on punt returns. They throw, you know, 5 or 6 screens to him every single game. Just get it to him. A couple linemen out in front. He does a great job setting up his blocks. And if he gets a step, he's gone. He is as fast as there is in the state. So he's a weapon against Brewer. They didn't have much going. It was 10-0 Brewer at the half in the first round playoff game, or second round, I guess. He returned a kickoff, you know, to across midfield, caught a fade for a 40-yard touchdown, caught a 70-yard hitch, and just took it, you know, the distance.
And had 2 interceptions.
And had 2 interceptions, one in the end zone after you know, Brewer run it down to the 5. So he's just been outstanding for them. And, you know, we've always known he's had that, you know, ability. And he returned a kickoff against us for a touchdown in week 2. So he's as explosive an athlete as there is. And Marshwood, you know, got their hands full, because, you know, when you watch the film, he's the guy that stands out. Like, we have got to limit his touches or his ability to, you know, to find space. And then if you do that, you know, Barnes is on the other side. He's 6'1", 6'2", 6'3", whatever he is, and can go get it. And Savage and Colby Miller in the inside, they're tough to defend. There's no doubt about it. They throw screens, and Marcus Christopher's been outstanding. I didn't know in the wind last Friday night if they'd be able to throw, but he, you know, threw for 300 yards.
Yeah.
So they were impressive. It's supposed to be possibly raining, I guess, on Saturday night down in Portland, a little drizzle, 40 degrees, but I don't think that's going to really slow down their offense either. So I think people, you know, that say Marshwood's going to roll in this game, I just don't think that's the case. Yeah. Skowhegan's changed a ton. I think they get a lot of confidence, and that offense will keep them in it.
Yeah, on the turf in Portland too, it'd be interesting to see that team. I don't know if they've played on field turf yet this season.
Yeah, they. I don't know.
I don't think they played at Hamden. Hamden came to them. So
right.
Not many teams in your league have it.
So. Right. Yeah, that's right.
Marshwood, though, undefeated, and this is a team that's been here, you know, many times before with Coach Alex Roscoe. Got there in, what, 2011, 2012? Yeah. Went to the state game in 2012, lost a great shootout game to Mount Blue,
yeah,
and then won back-to-back titles against Brunswick. Now he's back there for the fourth time. So this is a team that's not going to be daunted by a big stage.
Yeah, and the status of their quarterback, I know I watched their game against Falmouth, and he left either late third, early fourth with a...
Tommy Springer,
yeah. And he's a really another dual-threat kid. That I don't know his stats, but he can run. You know, he can throw it all over the place, and they do a great job getting him to the edge. And he left with a concussion-like symptoms. It doesn't mean he had a concussion, mm-hmm, so I don't know his status for the game. And I think the backup's a sophomore, so that's a big difference. If you've got a kid that started all year long, and now a kid's getting his first start in the state championship game, you know, that would be a significant blow to that Marshwood team. But, you know, they're almost like a machine. You know, Coach Roscoe, yeah, if the article today that Steve Craig wrote from the Portland Press that we had in the KJ up here, yeah, 15 straight, did I read that right? They call it Super Bowls in Massachusetts.
Western Mass,
Long Meadow High School. Yeah. He went to 15 straight, won 9. He's been to 4 up here. I mean, he's just, you know, cranks out, you know, this incredible wing T style offense, and they just, you know, well-oiled machine, and they attack you in A gap and B gap and C gap, and then pop a pass on. They're really tough to defend. So I know Skowhegan's preparing just as much as
not one guy you can key on. Yeah. They've got 3 or 4 backs who get equal amount of carries, and they do a lot of different things.
Yeah, that makes it really, really difficult.
And the run defense has clearly been the key to Skowhegan kind of making that jump up from one of the teams in the mix to being the top team in that B North field. And this will be that game that tests and sees just how much progress they've made in that front. If they're able to limit what Marshwood could do on the field, well, now you're looking to a game where maybe you don't need to, maybe if you could score the amount of points Skowhegan's been scoring, that's enough to win. I mean, if Marshwood's pouring in 55 points, that's obviously too much for Christopher to keep up with. But if you could limit them to 28, 27, something like that.
Yeah. And Marshford, they just test you, you know, like Brewer in the first round game. They're between the tackles, you know, between the tight ends, you know, run game. And Lawrence without LaRoche was a little bit limited, I thought, in the run game last week. Marshwood just spreads you out, and they just attack you in so many different ways. Their guards are so quick at pulling. So, I mean, that is a real, real challenge for any defense. They proved it all year long that offense is pretty much just run at will against everyone. So, it's a great challenge, you know, for Skowhegan. And, you know, I'm sure coaches up there are preparing the boys, and they'll be fired up Saturday night.
Yeah, Skowhegan's retooled defensive line with guys like Colby Coro, who missed the first game with some injury stuff, will certainly be tested. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Joe.
I was going to say, the catch to this whole Marshwood dominant talk is they almost got bounced in the last game. Falmouth gave them everything that they can handle, a three-point game. And you saw Falmouth. I mean, I that didn't look like one team deserved to be on the field more than the other. I mean, they kind of pulled away at the end.
Yeah.
You guys were competitive with them all throughout. I mean, that looked like a team that suggests some similarity between the B North and B
South. Yeah, and Falmouth had the ball in that Western Maine final at the 10-yard line, down 3 points with 40 seconds to go in a timeout. And Jack Bryan, who, you know, might be the best quarterback in Maine, you know, he puts up huge numbers, and he rolled out and was kind of trying to throw the ball to avoid a sack, got hit, and they called it a fumble. They kind of thought it was a forward pass. You know, so Falmouth had every, you know, when I was watching, I thought they're gonna win this here at the buzzer and go on to play Falmouth. Go, he could be quite a matchup as far as spread offenses go. But yeah, you know, and Marshwood, you know, played really pretty well on defense in that game, and they still gave up 28 points. So it's going to be a test for Marshwood. I'm really intrigued of all the games. Maybe it's because I'm a Class B guy. I'm really intrigued to see that Skowhegan offense and the Marshwood offense, you know, contrasting styles, with the conditions factoring in at all Saturday night. It should be a fun game for the state to watch.
Yeah. Well, that Class B game will be the final game at Fitzpatrick Stadium on Saturday. The first game is Class A game between Scarborough and Windham. Scarborough, kind of a newcomer to the Class A football scene, been on the rise the last couple of years. They won a state championship in 2002 back in Class B. Windham's been here before. Coach Matt Perkins has had a strong program over the years. I think it's been a few years, but Windham's always a contender. But Windham's coming off, and you alluded to it earlier, Drew, a 66-7 loss to Scarborough in the regular season.
And this wasn't a week one thing. This was, I mean, it wasn't last week of the season either, but it was later on in the season when the teams had kind of started to be to find their identities. This is the game, I think, of the four that is the toughest to work, talk yourself into thinking that this can be a close game. This is just based on, it's not just on Windham, but it's what Scarborough's been able to do. I mean, the way that they're rolling right now. Right. I mean, to beat a team that beat them in Thornton Academy by 42 points in the final is just, I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's unheard of. Yeah.
And I mean, and Windham's a team that was actually outscored during the regular season. I know that their whole thing has been what they've been able to do in the playoffs and beating higher seeded teams and everything. But it's tough just with what Scarborough has done to see an upset in this mix. From my opinion, I don't know if you do feel the same way.
Yeah, I mean, I do. Scarborough's offense is just flying. When they went to Bon Eagle week 8 and beat them by 35-14 or 35-21, I was like, wow, I did not. And Bon Eagle was rolling at that point. And I know, obviously, they're very well coached. And if Jack Bryan's not the best quarterback, or Tommy Springer, or Marcus Christopher, then the Pandia kid from Scarborough might be. So I'm seeing a trend here. Good quarterbacks tend to. I know in Maine we focus on the running game, and a lot of teams do that. But there's some good quarterbacks playing in the state championships this coming weekend. And the Pandia kid from, I believe that's how you pronounce it, has really, when called upon, they could run the ball on anybody. The Garrard kid, and they run a lot of jet sweeps with some of their athletes, but he could throw the ball down the field as well as anyone. So. Windham has their work cut out for them. There's no doubt, because that's a tough Scarborough offense, and their defense is outstanding. I mean, they had Thornton Academy shut out. To hold Bon Eagle to 14 is a real challenge. And so, Lance Johnson's done a great job at Scarborough, building them up, as you said, Travis, the past few years. And this seems like their moment is there, but you never know.
I mean, Bon Eagle up to that point had spent pretty much 3/4 of the season looking like they were head and shoulders above everybody.
Yeah, right.
I mean, and this wasn't beating a team that had 2 hot weeks to start the season,
right,
or something like that. This was looking like, just give Bon Eagle the hardware now. And then Scarborough not only does that, but beats him convincingly, beats Thornton convincingly. I don't know if there's a team that's coming in with more head of steam than Scarborough is right now.
Yeah, they haven't lost since that week 1 loss to Thornton Academy, where they kind of gave up the game late. So that's what, 9 wins in a row, 10 wins in a row?
Yeah, I think they're 9-1 right now. And what week did you say that game was against Thornton? The first
week 1, yeah.
Oh, week 1, yeah.
I think it was week 1, yeah. All right. Guys, thanks for coming. This is the season finale. We don't have a cliffhanger or any big finish that you're going to have to tune into for next year, but we will be back next season. Enjoy the state champion games. Please go to centralmaine.com for all your championship coverage from Friday night up in Orono and Saturday afternoon at Fitzpatrick Stadium in Portland. For Drew, for BL, I'm Travis. Thanks for watching.